The agri-hood is one approach to what I call kind of the local food movement. It's people trying to ensure the integrity of their food by getting your food from people they know. And you, as that neighborhood, have control over how it's produced.
Farm-to-table living, a neighborhood that would be based on community and doing life with people and wellness. And so I'm reading this description of this agri-community, and I look at my husband, and I'm like, we will live here.
We set out on a journey over 7,000 miles ago because we wanted to learn as much as we could about the agri-hood lifestyle. And what we quickly realized is why more and more people are choosing healthier and sustainable communities over traditional or conventional subdivisions.
The biggest difference would just be the sense of like-minded people. We all want our kids to be outside, fishing, climbing trees, you know, visiting with the animals, being in touch with reality, being in touch with nature, eating healthy food. I mean, there's really no comparison. There's nothing quite like what we're experiencing here.
You're dialed into the perfect podcast. This is Agri-Hood Radio. Everything you need to know about the farm-to-table lifestyle.
Hey, Dr. Stanton, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
That's great. Now, before I get going, do you prefer to be called by John or Dr. Stanton? Does it matter to you?
Doesn't matter. Actually, I prefer John.
Okay. We'll go by John. You're out there in the East Coast right now. I'm sitting here down in the southern part of Texas. And before we get rolling, I have to say thank you for allowing us to be in your presence and showering us with your intellect, the accolades you have, they could probably cover the distance between you and I physically right now. The list is long. And to get things started, I have to ask you, what in the hell is going on in the world of industrial agriculture right now, John?
Well, you know, science has really had an impact on virtually every aspect of life, from, you know, treating diseases to communicating with each other, and science has had a major impact on agriculture. And the impact comes from things like GMOs, comes from better water management, comes from better understanding of plant nutrition. And so really it's moving more scientifically, just like all the other areas.
It is. Okay. 100% spot on with that. I think we all agree with that, but it's not moving in the best direction on a macro level, is it?
Well, you know, that's such a difficult question to answer, because if you take something like GMOs, there are people in sub-Sahara and Saharan Africa that suddenly have the ability to grow products because it's more drought resistant, it's more pest resistant, etc. On the other hand, in the more developed countries, people are concerned about what could be the long-term effects of GMOs. I think that people are concerned about things like cattle breeding and the environment. And so it comes down to, well, if you cut back on the amount of cows, or you say that, you know, the growing beef is not good for the environment, then there are going to be an awful lot of people who say, well, listen, I like beef. Someone else says I make my living on beef. So every one of these questions, you have a balance. And it's up to society, unfortunately, through our elected officials, to kind of decide which way that balance is going to go.
Right. And the bottom line, I guess, for the safety of the general public is how is the beef being raised? How is the Roundup being sprayed not to contaminate the food that we're eating? That's the how is what I mean. I understand people are never going to give up beef. I'm not here to change anybody's mind on what they should eat, but I want to, what I'd like to do, my objective is to share, to get some wisdom and awareness of how things are being done right now. So then people have a better source of information to make better choices based on their personal lifestyle.
Sure. And you know, that's that. I think the key that you said is giving people choice. But at the same time, we also have to look at what's best for society's interest. But if we look, for example, at letting people make individual choices, it's key that we get people the right information so they can make these decisions intelligently. There may be a lot of people who say, you know what, I like beef, but you know, I'm just going to cut back on it. I'm going to eat some other things. For example, I'm going to eat more fish. Well, what happens? Well, the world's fishery business can't keep up and actually have the possibility of reducing this, you know, fish stocks to almost nothing. So someone says, well, you know what? I won't eat as much beef. I'll, you know, not overdo it on seafood, but I will, in fact, eat more chicken. Well, now we have more penned up chickens.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. But let's talk about a little more deeper, nitrosamines.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
Sure.
So we know that that is not healthy for the body. That's been proven. Now, a lot of meat, lunch meats, have nitrosamines. That it's a
oh yeah
yeah
mm-hmm.
okay. And then we know that commercial dairy is often given the hormones that FDA agrees on here, gives the green light here, but it's been banned in Canada, Europe, and Japan, and a lot of other countries don't allow that. So that's more of the
RBST.
Yeah, exactly. So that's more the conversation I would like people to be aware of. Okay, now you know if you're eating lunch meat, there's a good chance there's going to be some preservatives in that meat that has some controversy surrounding it. When you go to eat that cow with growth hormone, right? That cow, that is banned in certain countries. But now you know going into it that that's a decision that's on you now. But you have the information to make a decision.
Yep. Oh, I mean, I agree that the key is this information. Now, I will say this. Someplace in your report, your video, you need to make it clear that when other countries ban things, sometimes that's called non-tariff barrier to entry. So, you know, if we look at Europe and GMOs, they were against all GMOs until they started producing some of their own, and then it wasn't quite as bad.
Money, the bottom line is the money, right?
It's, yeah, unfortunately, it really is. And so a lot of times they'll say, oh, we're not allowed to charge a tariff on this, so instead we'll say it's not healthy.
And make it ourselves.
But that's kind of a separate issue, but that's kind of a political way of not all of the other countries that ban things do it strictly because they're concerned about health. It should come as no surprise that it has as much to do about the money. But, you know, this thing, if you talk about the, you know, the bovine, a really good example is what they give dairy cows, which is the RBST, which causes the cows to produce a little more milk, about 10% more milk. Now, FDA said there's no problem with that because it actually occurs naturally, as well as the recombinant version. But you know what happened? People got nervous about it. And it's hard today to find milk, fluid milk, that comes from cows that have been treated. That the public, by their choice, basically stopped the use of this hormone. And I think that it doesn't matter whether it really harms people or doesn't harm people. If the consumers didn't want it, they didn't buy it, and they literally stopped the use of that, you know, of that hormone.
Weren't their decisions based on some scientific knowledge of showing that how the cows are getting tumors and how it's not good for the cow, therefore it's being passed on to the consumer?
I did a research study on GMOs, and I found people that were against GMOs, and I gave them a lot of sources of information. So I gave them World Health Organization, you know, USDA. I gave them the EU statements, all of which said GMOs aren't bad for you. How much do you think that people's opinion changed?
Zero.
Yep. It appears that the whole social media, your whole friends and family, have significantly more impact on what your attitude is to these things than the science. Now, what I think is crucial here is that doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, if somebody thinks, you know what, I just don't trust the fact that all of these beef cows are getting all these chemicals and some of them are getting sick, etc. The fact that they might not, why, is irrelevant. The fact that they've reached that conclusion, they're comfortable with that conclusion, and it can, in fact, ultimately, if enough people believe it, have an impact on the way that the cattle are raised.
Right.
You're really talking about, you know, people reaching a conclusion which may be the right conclusion for them based not necessarily on science, but it doesn't matter because that conclusion is what they're driving their life on, you know, their life decisions.
You know a lot, John. I mean, you've been at the university since 1984, correct?
Yep.
So when I saw you in Sustainable, I watched that documentary at least two or three times in the last 3 or 4 days. And everything, the more I watched, the more I learned. And I thought this for years. They say the juice is all natural, but it's the concentrate comes from Brazil.
Yeah.
Right? Then it hits Florida, then it goes to Georgia, and then they call it local. And you said, is that really local? And that was, you know, I've seen that for several years. I asked myself the same question, and that's what got my attention on that one. You also said this all natural thing is being played out so much, and your response to that was cyanide is also all natural.
The all natural thing. You know, that's a comforting thought for consumers, but it's almost meaningless in terms of what their food is going to be like or whether it's good for them or bad for them. Or, you know, I'm a firm believer that when someone eats something, they should enjoy it and they should feel as if they're doing the right thing and not feeling guilty. And the only way that can happen is if the food industry makes it abundantly clear the conditions in which that food existed. There has to be this transparency in the future. Now, keep in mind that it wasn't that many years ago that, you know, that people didn't have access to all of this food. My mother was poor, and she ate whatever, you know, was available. When my grandmother made stew, people didn't say, "Where'd this beef come from?"
No, exactly.
So we're looking at what this started with. We're looking at the advancement of knowledge, the advancement of science, as well as, you know, the advancement of consumer knowledge. But the key to me is going to be transparency.
Bingo.
And clarity.
Right. That's my whole point. Let's be clear, upfront, and honest. And I think there's some deception going on out there. And the first company that comes to mind, of course, is Monsanto. They've been under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of controversy around that company. The same company that invented Agent Orange is now saying that their Roundup is what? Safe for the farmers, right? And the farmers it's a split decision. Some farmers are saying yes, others are saying no. That's a whole other topic. I got that. But you have some insight as far as being, you know, you've been on, you've published over 60 academic articles, right, including the Journal of Marketing, yep, Research and Science. So is there a link, I guess, in your opinion, that every American over the age of 19 understands that a poor diet often leads to poor health? Yet there's an epidemic of diseases like heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and cancer in our society. Is there a common thread? Is there a link between how we're eating and what we're getting?
I don't think there's any question that there is a link. I don't think people completely understand the link. And I also think that the bifurcation of our desire to have wonderful taste and the opinion that we ought to eat, quote, healthy, is a force in each consumer that, you know, that drives their behavior. I think that my personal opinion is that too much of anything, some things worse than others, let's just say saturated fats, you're going to pay a price at some point in your life if you overdo it. On the other hand, if a person wants to enjoy once every month or so a beautiful ribeye steak, that doesn't hurt them.
Right. It's, I don't exactly.
You know, I remember being around for a long time. I remember the first USDA guidelines. They were so simple. They basically said, eat a variety of foods and maintain your body weight, your ideal body weight. And, I mean, that's really what it's all about. Because, with certain exceptions, and I'll go back to the exception, if you're just eating a variety of food, you're getting all these mixtures of things, and you're not getting too much of anything.
Well, that's how the food pyramid was established back. Are you talking prior to that?
Prior to that, yeah. Yeah, what's happened is, you know, they just eat a variety of food. You know, that's so simple, and people can understand it. And then the 5-8 kappas in the USDA say, let's make it a pyramid. No, a pyramid, rather, a triangle. Okay, let's make it a pyramid. You know, people don't understand. You know, I think they had the idea of let's make it a dodecahedron.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of silly. It's really about a variety.
It is.
And that was the first advice they gave. And, of course, maintain your body weight. Now, the issue with Roundup is and Monsanto is a real serious issue. The science, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone had this suspicion that smoking wasn't good for you, but no one could absolutely prove it. And it took them like, who were the scientists that were, you know, they were all employed by the tobacco
companies. Yeah.
And it wasn't until that guy, Jeffrey, forget what his name is, kind of spilled the beans, that it really started to change. And I think with this Roundup, there was so much positive PR about how it's helping farmers and it's helping all of this, that anything that kind of addressed, maybe this isn't quite what we think, kind of got pushed to the back. Now, what I would like to see, quite frankly, is much more serious scientific research on this and an unbiased research. Because what happens is when you get these things like tobacco, all the research is done by
in-house.
In-house on one side, and then the people that hate tobacco on the other side. There wasn't a really unbiased view for the longest time. And I think we need to get some unbiased research focused on some of these things.
I agree.
My personal guess is that Roundup is really not the end of the world. I certainly don't want to drink it.
No.
I certainly don't want to be exposed to it too much on a regular basis. But I'm guessing some of these things, again, what we started, the balance, probably isn't, you know, the devil in the clothes, et cetera, in the form of a
devil in disguise.
Yeah, I couldn't think of that word. Yeah, disguise. But But it's something probably that needs to really get studied. Now, the other thing I think is important is, you know, more people are dying of cancer today. However, fewer people are dying from tuberculosis. I mean, we got to die from something. And, you know, we have to be careful to understand that when we wipe out one thing, it just means more of us are going to die from another thing. And so I'm not sure that identifying, for example, cancer or things like that as unequivocal evidence that, you know, that this is bad for you. I want to give you one example, which I find interesting.
Please.
One of the things that the people that objected to the hormone in milk cows, not beef, but milk cows, was they said this hormone that they're putting in the dairy cows, if you look at the age in which young girls are starting menstruation, it's been getting younger and younger, and, you know, they've been putting this in milk. However, girls have been starting menstruation earlier for like 50 years before they started putting this in cows. I mean, it is true that, you know, that it's getting younger and younger, but it's not necessarily associated with this hormone that they put in cows. So we have to be careful to try to make sure that our research is good and not susceptible, you know, just to, I would say, not very good research.
What was the biggest impact when they came to you, the producers of that sustainable? Did they give you a heads up they were coming after you? Did they get some information from you and talk with you? They were impressed by your title, or did it come out of the blue?
No, it was a scheduled meeting, and I knew it was going to come, and I knew the topic for probably a month.
Got you. And then, what do you think that documentary? First of all, let's top this back up a second. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being completely accurate, what's your perception of the authenticity of it all? How accurate do you think that documentary is?
I thought the documentary was pretty good.
Okay.
You know, you say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say an 8. No, that's not fair. What they did was they presented some people that I thought had a pretty extreme view, and that wasn't necessarily the prevailing view, if you know what I mean.
I do.
But they presented a lot of different opinions. So the extent that they tried to capture what was really happening, I think they did a very good job of. Some of the people that they interviewed, from my point of view, were pretty far off the deep end.
Extremist. Now,
I don't remember which one. Like, I know they interviewed a friend of mine, Marion Nestle.
The book author, the food politic, yeah, the author,
yeah,
right.
You know, I think she has a pretty reasonable position on things. Most everything I agree with her on. Some things I don't agree with her on. But I would put her in the category. I think a really good spokesperson, presenting a fair point of view. There were, I'm trying to think of which ones. It's been a while since I've seen it. But there were some people on the edge, if you will.
I gotcha. That's true with life.
But they're
right?
Out there.
Yeah, they're out there. Exactly what you just said. They're out there. And I said, that's true with life. They're out there.
Yeah. 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 And you know, their opinion was expressed. And I can't begrudge that, the fact that I don't necessarily agree with all those opinions. I'm more, not laissez-faire, but I can't get too excited. Let me give you an example. I can't get excited about cage-free chickens. You know, most of these cage-free chickens, they have to force them out of the... Chickens don't necessarily want to be caged.
Uncaged, cage-free.
You know, cage-free. Yeah. The second thing is, when you put these chickens out in the open air, et cetera, they're much more susceptible to various avian flus because they're in contact with wild birds. You know, so it's a lot of these things are six of one, half a dozen of the other. I like to kid people, and they say, well, I like my chickens, you know, I don't want them caged up, et cetera. You mean before you kill them? I mean, I just want to make sure that I'm clear that you're going to kill them, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
But I think that in this society, we can humanely treat animals, but still have them part of our food supply.
Exactly. John, let me ask, on a personal level, knowing what you know, the experience you have, the knowledge that you have within, how is your health on a personal level?
My health is pretty good. I'm on a seafood diet.
You seafood, you eat
that
it?
That is, if I see food, I eat it.
I got you.
I have, now I'm a little older, right? So I'm 73 now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I would have, I honestly, God, I thought you were, seriously, John, I thought you were in your late 50s, maybe early 60s.
I'll tell you, you can talk with me as long as you want.
Honest to God, I did.
Well, I have been told I have a lot of energy, so. But in my case now, I'm trading off something that might promise longevity for an immediate gratification. So I don't have second thoughts about, you know, having a steak anytime I want it. 20 years ago, I might have.
Why? Why have things changed?
Because I have less of my life at risk.
I see. In other words, you're saying your lifestyle's more moderate now than it was when you were younger.
Yes. Because, I mean, actually, this is a joke I had with the doctor. You know, I said to the doctor, you know, each year that I get older, I'm putting less at stake for making risky decisions. You know, when you're 20, you're putting 60 years of your life at stake, you know, by smoking, let's say.
Yeah.
In my case, I'm probably putting, you know, who knows, but not many years at risk. I said to the doctor, matter of fact, I'm thinking about becoming a heroin addict.
Why not? What the hell?
Right? There's not much out there to risk.
Yeah.
These goddamn doctors are so serious. John, I wouldn't recommend that you...
Take this long list of medications instead so I can make a kickback from Prilosec. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, if you really want to say, what about today? What about food today, consumers today? It's an issue of choice, and choice means transparency. Choice means that there's going to be people out there that are going to charge more money for products that were harder to produce without science. And there are a lot of people out there that will pay it. And the good example, of course, is organic. You know, cost a lot more, and a lot of people are willing to pay it.
Is it being loosely used, the term organic? Is it be thrown around like a... Is it how... I guess I was on the phone with a cattle rancher from Wyoming, and he shared some insight. And he said that term organic is just being thrown around like it's, you know, just another word. And a lot of big major corporations know how to beat the system and call it organic when it's not. You get right down to it, it's not any different than what they're selling you on the next shelf over.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And probably the bigger difference is, you know, the basic concept of organic really started with primarily fresh produce. And, you know, people imagine these local farms would have grown this the way they'd like to have it grown. And, of course, the big producers said, hey, they're getting a lot more margin, a lot more profit out of that. Let's us see what we can do. So now you have, let's say, cereal companies that have organic cereals, where the raw ingredients, let's say, comes from China. Do you have any reason to believe they might not be following all the rules for organic?
Yeah.
Yeah, they poison children.
I get it. Yeah, for sure. You said that in your part you played in the documentary. You said that marketing and the packaging is what's memorable. That's what they're hitting us with, is the marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that for most products, the organic symbol from USDA is fair and accurate. Are there people that are trying to kind of sneak in? Yeah. And there's ways of doing it, and, you know, but I think in general, organic is probably, for most things, followed pretty closely. But keep in mind, you know what percent of food from typical supermarkets are organic?
I'm going to take a shot at this. I'm going to say less than 15.
Yeah. You're right. It's like 10, it's about 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's more in some categories, for sure, right? I mean, it's much more in fresh produce, et cetera, and vegetables. But, you know, people talk about how big this trend is and everyone has to get into organic. It's actually pretty small. I think you could call it a niche.
Yes.
Now, don't forget, there's riches in niches.
For sure.
It doesn't mean it, but people get excited about certain, quote, trends because they're growing fast. A good example, my research class did a project on why fluid milk sales are going down, and they all identified all of these plant-based milk products, you know, rice milk and
almond milk, cashew milk.
All these things. The biggest competitor to milk is water. The second is sugary beverages. The least of all of the dairy of all the groups stealing sales from milk, you know, it's not these plant-based milks. The biggest reason, what do you think the biggest reason people don't drink milk? They don't eat breakfast.
Skipping the breakfast. Having
Skipping
the sugar.
The breakfast.
Having the donut and the Pop-Tart on the way out the door.
Yeah. You know, and they're no longer having the cornflakes and milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lifestyle change. Yet all of the students focused on this plant-based milk product.
Yeah. My biggest gripe is when you see, you know, we're adults. We have enough knowledge with the computer, the internet. We're very aware, I believe, that sugar is the culprit to a lot of ailments. My biggest gripe, now that I'm a father of a four-year-old boy, my biggest thing is I'm trying to take responsibility as a parent to get him set up on the right track and not overload him with a bunch of sugar. And then when we travel for work, we sometimes will go to a reputable daycare and we'll ask, first thing we ask, what's your menu look like? Well, they get here at 8 o'clock in the morning, and for breakfast, we give them a Pop-Tart. And I'm like, are you kidding? No, I mean, that's not how we're raising our son, but that's one school out of the entire country, and that seems to be the norm, and that's what kind of tightens me up a little bit when we don't give the kids a chance, set them up on the proper path so they can live a healthier, better life, not load them with sugar, and then say, oh, they got ADHD. I mean, that's a whole other topic, but that's what gets me going.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, that's unbelievable. I would say this, though, and let me... I believe that parental influence just totally dominates the way a kid sees life. So if you do a good job of saying, look, here's the way we eat, and I actually, in my case, just personally, I used to tell my kids, we don't judge other people. You know, they can eat what they want, they can do what they want, but this is our family, this is what we do. And those exceptions, you know, when you go to the daycare and they give the child a Pop-Tart in the morning,
mm-hmm.
as long as the son is saying, well, this is kind of an unexpected treat, but this is not normal for him.
Sure.
It's not really that bad. What's bad, I mean, everyone's going to, you know, they discovered that if you told people on a diet you can eat no chocolate, It was less effective if you told people to cut back on their chocolate.
I see what you're saying. There's restriction instead of moderation. Yeah, and trying to teach a four-year-old kid that at this point is like, well, I had it at school for the last, because when we travel, we're gone now, 3.5 months. We're gone from Arizona. We're doing, you know, running our cooking show circuit. So we're on the road. It's not like a one-day deal. If I'm going to take him to a daycare, it's, you know, 3, 4, sometimes 5 weeks. And now that for the last 5 weeks, he eats that sugary crap and then gets back home and says, well, at school. So that's my situation. And that's
a really different situation than, you know, the one and done type of
exactly. It's not like the birthday party that happens every, you know, back in the neighborhood block party
and everyone eats cake or something.
Right.
But I would say this. I mean, looking back, I'm convinced that this impact of the parental impact is enormous. And you don't even see, you know, my daughter was probably 30 and had two kids when the first time she said to me, you know, Dad, I just want to thank you for, you know, the way you raised us and the rules that we had to abide by. You know, it took about 30 years and it took about, especially with a teenage girl, you know, it took about 20 times screaming, I hate you, and slamming the door.
Right.
But it clearly had an effect.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I think is important, and to share with the kids why, even if they're 5 years old, share with them
why is the driving force.
The payoff there is big.
It is, John. I want to say thank you for your time. I appreciate that. You know, you and I probably could keep going on and on and on here. I will definitely. You're on a spring break, right?
Right now I am. Yeah, but I listen. You know what a full-time faculty load? I'm a full professor. I teach Tuesday and Thursday from 12:30 to 3.
Oh, okay. Then I'm definitely going to I got your number. I have your contact. Yeah. We got to bring you back on because, you know, the knowledge and the wisdom you have is priceless. So for now, I want to say thank you for today's input. We appreciate that. And I'll definitely be in touch with you. And if people want to reach out to you, are you available to the public for questions and answers?
Oh, anytime.
How?
Yeah, give them the telephone number. I don't care. You know, if I don't want to talk to people, I mean, I don't feel trapped by if someone calls me.
The line we're on right now?
Yep.
Okay, 856 area code 415-1774. Do you have an email they can start off with or just give you a call? How do you ahead with the email.
Email's an email. Easy. It's J Stanton. In other words, it's J Stanton at sju.edu. That's St. Joseph University, SJU.edu.
Perfect.
Pretty easy.
Appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, good. You anytime. Call me anytime.
Enjoy your break. I will. Thank you again. Have a great day.
Right. Bye-bye.
If healthy and sustainable living is important to you and your family, join the Coleman family as they travel the country and discover some of the best agri communities in America.